Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Bone of the Mo Thugs movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'm going to ask you this, though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout-out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
I'm sorry, the person you are trying to reach has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet. Please try your call again later. Goodbye. Your call has been forwarded to an automated voice messaging system. I'm sorry, the person you are trying to reach has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet. Please try your call again later. Goodbye.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef. 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day, running from the police. That's right, mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. Tell us it was fair. No love for my daddy, cause the coward wasn't there. He passed away and I didn't cry, cause my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger. They say I'm wrong and I'm heartless, but all along I was looking for a father, he was gone. I hung around with the thugs, and even though they sold drugs, they showed a young brother love.
I moved out, started really hanging. I needed money of my own, so I started slanging. I ain't guilty, cause even though I sell rocks, it feels good putting money in your mailbox. I love paying rent when the rent's due. I hope you got the diamond necklace that I sent to you. Cause when I was low, you was there for me. You never left me alone because you cared for me. And I could see you coming home after work late. You're in the kitchen trying to fix us a hot plate. Just working with the scraps she was giving. And mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. But now the road got rough, you're alone. Trying to raise two bad kids on your own. And there's no way I can pay you back. But my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. And dear mama, you all appreciate it. Pour out some liquor and I reminisce. Cause through the drama I can always depend on my mama. And when it seems that I'm hopeless, you say the words that can get me back in focus. When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me. There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me. And all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back. But my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you, sweet
dear mama.
Place no one above
you. You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you, sweet
dear mama. Dear mama.
Hey, is this Don? Don?
Yeah, I'm here.
Don,
are
here?
Are you here, Ron? Yeah.
Yep, gotcha. There we go. Thank you.
Gosh.
Sorry about that. I was having some problems getting all connected and everything.
Hey, well, I've had tons of problems tonight, man. Here I'm 11 minutes in. No guest. We were supposed to have Aspen Ladd, and you know why? Actually, I would generally be pissed off in this situation, but her boyfriend, who is actually her coach and trainer, he can't get a hold of her either, and he's tried every. I mean, he's even trying to get a hold of her mother right now to figure out what's going on because.
Holy crap!
I've been interviewing her for probably 7 years, and she's never missed a show.
Yeah,
so,
well, I hope she's safe. That doesn't sound too hot. Hope she's safe, man, in the prayers.
No, yeah, you know, me too. I hope she's safe because, you know, the thing of it is I have another guest after this, and I didn't want to take away from, you know, letting that gentleman have his day on the show. But I also, you know, I appreciate you coming on as my brother because you truly are a warrior in the sport, you know, and it's – Not the kind of interview that I wanted to give you, you know, not a fill-in, but you're my family and my brother, so of course you're going to step up to the plate, and I truly appreciate that. But
anytime you need, man.
Oh, see, that's what family's about. You know, Ronald, like we were talking about the other day on the Connor live feed that we did about what our thoughts were. You know, I truly have sat back and realize what you've done in a year and a half, you know, a little over. It's surely impossible for a lot of individuals. You know, you've been to Abu Dhabi, you've won, you just double gold at the LA Grand Slams. I mean, you've done everything physically possible in MMA, and then you jump over to jiu-jitsu in the last year and a half, or a little over, and you take the world by storm, whether it be in the para world or in the able body division. You've made a significant difference. What was it inside of you that made you feel that you had to show the world who Ronald Mann truly is, and what has that path been like for you?
Well, it's, you know, I don't know that it's so much that I'm showing the world who Ronald Mann is. It's more that this is a gift, this path that I'm walking is a gift to me, and you know, I have an opportunity to show people what true ability is. When I lost my leg in a motorcycle accident 23 years ago, this was before they had amputees on commercials, and they had, you know, Paralympics had just started, nobody knew about it. And the first couple of academies I went to would not let me train there because of the misconception either I was going to get hurt or that I'd hurt somebody. And you know, over the last, man, 23 years, I've been able to help a lot of people see that just because you're broken doesn't mean that you're not still alive inside, you know, that you can come back off these things, whether you're born with some kind of mobility issue or whether you have a traumatic accident, or if you have to have later on in life, you have to have surgeries, you know, my body does not define who I am. And for me, that was a hard one to come over. When I first lost my leg, I was 24 years old, just off active duty in the United States Army. And 92 days later, I crashed my motorcycle and flatlined twice on that chopper ride in. And so, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. And it was 30 days, exactly 30 days after the motorcycle accident. They put me out of the hospital in 7 days, and they didn't really have, you know, good recovery back then. And I didn't have any insurance. I just left the military. And, I just, 30 days after, I was sitting in my parents' living room, and I had, my father's pistol to my head because I didn't think I could do it anymore, man. And for, I don't know what intervened at that last moment, but, I decided that I wasn't going to just quit life. You know, we all have to pass, but I was going to go down fighting. And, you know, right after that, my friends started taking me to the gym to lift weights. They had to actually carry the weights to me because I was so weak. And then I started walking at 60 days, and at 90 days, I found an academy that would allow me to train and compete there. And so for me, this whole journey that we've had for almost, I can't believe it's a quarter century now, this is a gift to me, because I was able to realize that my life wasn't done. And now, you know, going through Muay Thai and kickboxing and then transitioning to mixed martial arts and winning a 107-pound title against an able-bodied person, I thought that was as high as I could go, and I retired. But with jiu-jitsu, it's almost like a rebirth now. I really have found an area of life that I've been searching for. And my family here at Yamasaki Academy, they help me grow and to be a better man. You know, it's one more opportunity for me to help somebody else get up off the couch and decide to live again. If one more person sees my story or watches a fight and it inspires them to get up and live and not be near death, not ready to give up, then my life has been well lived, brother.
Yeah, you know, I feel you on that, you know, and you were brought into my life, you know, and I just, like I said, I sat back and I'm humbled because, you know, a lot of people know I'm an amputee myself, and they know my story. My listeners have heard it thousands and thousands of times, trust me, but man, the drive and the determination, and then the fact that I got to visually, right there in the moment, watch you, you know, go out there against two different opponents, literally in a matter of moments, and one being able body and one being a para athlete, and just devouring, you know, both oppositions. And I was just, it made me realize, and it made me, you know, it made me just sit back and have a deep thought that how much do we truly have in us as individuals? How much can we dig up? How much can we pull? And you exude it. And that, I've been shooting jiu-jitsu for a long time, bro. And what you show is phenomenal. The ability that you exude, the talent that you exude, and the attitude that you walk with is tremendous. How would you say that Yamasaki and Professor El Surley and meeting Iwano, how much would you say of them professors is now instilled in Ronald Mann that lets you allow to walk with the prestige that you do, bro?
You know, that's why jiu-jitsu is different for me. When I was fighting MMA, it was always a blood sport. It's always about getting that money. You know, I didn't really feel the connection to the legacy that was giving me the martial arts, was giving me the training, was giving me their heritage. And, you know, when I first started jiu-jitsu, of course, it's MMA has submission fighting in it, but it's different because, I mean, I only have one leg. I don't have a great guard. So I was always a top game fighter because I could bang on him. And jiu-jitsu, though, has taught me, in the last year and a half, I've probably had more growth physically, emotionally, and spiritually in the last year and a half, almost 2 years, starting with Magic Jiu-Jitsu in Lansing and now coming out to Yamasaki Academy. It is a way of life for me. It's like everything I do is not only a reflection of myself, but now it's a reflection of the entire Yamasaki lineage and all my teammates and family there, that when I can't stand by myself, they'll pick me up and walk with me. So that's, for me, that's why I talk about this being a gift, because it's helped me evolve again to that next level. And, I'm just fortunate, man. You talk about going out, the LA Grand Slam, I've won worlds, pair worlds, and UAE JJF back-to-back for my category. And then being able to go to the LA Grand Slam on the 23rd of last month, and you talk about how it was a, you know, back-to-back fight, you know, those things go. I was supposed to fight my para division at 4 and then my able body at 5. Well, 5:07, they called me for para. I went out and got that guy and was able to submit him. Actually, with a real cool setup, Tabron Lee showed it to me for a good Americana. But then as soon as I got off the mat, they pulled my car. I'd just taken my gi top off and like, all right, let's go fight. And so then I was allowed to go in and fight against an able body who he cut 15 pounds to get down that weight class. So not only does he have mobility on me, but he was a big dude. Like, oh, okay. But this is what we do. This is why in the academy you do round after round after round. You know, when it's not the same training against your partners. When you go out on the mat, it's 100%. For me, it's not about the win-losses. The LA Grand Slam was a gift because it showed me that I am truly equal. I can fight para categories. I can fight able body categories and gain respect in both competitions. It's not about winning or losing for me. When I go out on the mat, you know, we've talked about this, I kind of go empty inside. You can see it in my eyes. Everything just shuts down, and I only have one purpose for that moment. As long as I leave 100% of myself out on the mat, that's all I can ask for. Wins, losses, they come and go. But I was very fortunate in L.A. to bring home double gold and really set a very high standard for not only myself, but Yamasaki Academy and other parafighters as we're going along.
See, that's one thing that intrigues me about you, too, is you're really the heritage or the respect or one's demeanor towards the art. It changes from individual to individual. And, you know, that's one thing with you that I find unique is you've only been in for such a short period of time, but yet you've acquired the traditional aspect of how you look at the artistry of jiu-jitsu. And if my listeners are going, what the hell are you talking about, Don? The fact is, you know, the bowing to the mat. You know, never calling your professor by his first name. You always call him professor. And,
yes.
And, you know, and then looking at the opportunities that you get to roll with these icons or legendary, you know, is something that truly appeals to you, Ronald. I mean, you know, I know you were out there with Professor John Iwano, and I know you would have loved to have rolled with him, but you got to roll with his black belt. It was a very special day for you. That's the aspect that I'm talking about. What enthralled you, or did you get that mentality from Professor Yamasaki and those that have helped you in your walk?
You know, I think that's intrinsic to the martial arts. Learning about your heritage, learning about people that are these are men much greater than me, men and women much greater than I ever will be. You know, these are legends in the world of martial arts, not just jiu-jitsu, but in martial arts. And to even be able to be on the same mat as them is an honor. When we went out to California for the LA Grand Slam, we took a couple days before and a couple days after, just kind of, you know, have our vacation and enjoy LA. And Professor Iwano, he invited us to come out and train at his academy and allowed us to come and roll with him. And it's just such a welcoming and open and family environment. As soon as we got in there, like, you know, we'd interviewed him on that Monday, and Thursday I was out in California rolling with him. And, you know, I was rolling with one of his black belts, and we were doing, you know, 5-minute rounds, and we were running each other hard. I forget the guy's name, but amazing technical skill. And we got into the 5 minutes, and I heard somebody on the side go, "Isn't the round up?" And Professor Iwano goes, "No, we're just going to keep going. I want to see this." And so we rolled for another four and a half, five minutes again before he subbed me out. But, you know, training here at Yamasaki Academy in D.C., you know, I have all my teammates, and I've been able to roll with Professor Mario and Professor Fernando a couple times. And everybody has their unique style. And going out and seeing the influences that Professor Iwano has given his academy, and then, was it 3 days later, 4 days later? Felicia Oh, she was the sixth American woman to earn her black belt. And we'd been in contact. She interviewed me last year at the Grand Slam, and we became friends. And she invited Jamie and I to come down to Jean-Jacques Machado's academy and train there for an afternoon. And so not only do I get to hang out and roll with Felicia Oh, who set a new standard and in some ways gives me guidance, because she had to break down all these barriers before I did. You know, it wasn't always that women were allowed to train and compete in jiu-jitsu. You know, people like her, she's the one that led the way. Jean-Jacques Machado, when I first came out and started fighting MMA, that's when Professor Machado was dominating the ADCC. You know, he was the first man to submit all three of his opponents. And Professor Machado was born with, you know, a limitation on his hand. So he's been, like, he was one of those guys, I remember reading about him and watching him when I was, you know, first coming out. And he gave me so much inspiration because I saw him just run guys, and there was no difference. And to see the way he performed with no arrogance, just pure, that was, for me, that's been an amazing growth. But to be able to go out there and train at his academy, Professor Machado, you know, invited us in, Jamie got to roll and train with Felicia, and then, you know, I rolled with three of his black belts, and they ran me pretty hard. But when we got done, you know, after a couple rounds, I went to get some water, and Professor Machado was talking to one of his guys. He's like, yeah, it was a good roll. I just couldn't hook his leg. I'm used to hooking leg to sweep. And I started laughing a little bit. You know, and Professor Machado came over, and he just – everybody else was working out still, and we just had this long conversation, about 15 minutes just of jiu-jitsu, para-jiu-jitsu, life in general, his philosophies, his ideas. This is a man who's achieved legendary status as well as pinnacle of jiu-jitsu. I mean, he's a coral belt now. For him to allow me to come to his academy and train, and then to speak with me about these ideas, and then after that, we were allowed to roll for 10 minutes. I got to roll Jean-Jacques Machado, one of my personal heroes. Like, this is why I love jiu-jitsu. You know, in MMA, it's more of a camp versus camp thing. Jiu-jitsu, man, you've got family all over the world.
Yeah, you truly do. You truly do. You know, and that moment's going to be forever engraved in the legacy or the book of Ronald Mann. You know, and it's tremendous because, like I said, you know, you sit back and you realize things, and sometimes you think about, I mean, because we're friends, and I met you by interviewing you the first time, but now we've become brothers, so things have kind of, you know, slip away from time to time because, you know, let's face it, we talk all the time. We're family, so it's like I don't look at you as like I do all the other warriors. I just look at you as Ron, my brother, you know, who's out there doing it. But yes, when you sit back and you realize what you've done, it's incredible. You know, and to have that opportunity with Jean-Jacques, you know, and then, you know, right before that, John Awana. I mean, those two professors are tremendous. You know, I do want to tap on one question before I let you go. Oh, before we go any further, to my listeners, this is of course, this is an Aspen lad. I can't even talk tonight. She will be on after Shannon Rich. She just hit me. Her phone was going through an update or something, and she'll be doing the show after Shannon Rich. But this is Ronald Mann, a two-time gold winner in Abu Dhabi, double gold winner at the LA Grand Slam just recently, getting ready to go to Sweden. My man, you know, how does that feel, knowing that you get this invitation to Sweden, and now you get to showcase yourself on a global scale for the third time?
Yeah, it is an honor when I get contacted. Professor El Sirleh contacted me prior to the first Abu Dhabi Grand Slam. And the first year in 2017, it was selection only. There was 35 athletes picked from all around the world to come represent para jiu-jitsu. I was the only American invited that year. And so now to be asked to go into JJIF's, the International Federation, and be in their inaugural para tournament. I don't know how it happened. I just look back and go, this is a dream, but I'm not sure how I got here. Like, why does it continue on, you know? And that's the way I look at it, man. Like, this is a gift. It truly is. I could have done so many other paths, other things in my life, but staying here and staying dedicated and focused, and, you know, we all have ups and downs and trials, but as I continued on, it's allowed me to do things that I don't even know I could dream of these things before. And now they're actually coming true in my life. And the best thing is all I got to do is show up. All I got to do is go to the academy. I get a little bit better. And I have people that are much greater than me guiding my path in life. That is a beautiful thing, man. It's amazing.
Yeah, it truly is. And you just emulated Professor Wano himself, you know, and saying, I don't want your money. Just show up.
Yes.
You know? That's crazy.
Yes.
You know, I feel like I got to ask you a question that's going to lead into another day, another show, another topic, probably with Felicia O. But, you know, I've had two great professors, one being male, one being female. Both tell me that there is a dark side to the art, you know, and I'm not going to point any fingers because it's kind of a touchy subject, but I just want to get your input on how you take it, because you know, if you haven't heard it or you haven't heard the statement that came from Professor Janet Bishop out of Gracie Humada headquarters in San Diego, saying that sexism, inequality, and unfair treatments per se towards, you know, women in the art of jiu-jitsu existed, and she got pounded for it. But then we have a man who truly brought jiu-jitsu over here from another country, was one of the, you know, the helpers or the creators in that aspect, say that he's seen it for himself with his own eyes, that it does exist. How is one to decipher that aspect of the sport?
I think it's that darkness that you talk about is unique to an individual. Everything that influences you around you, you can make the choice whether you want to be that bigot or be a sexist or racist, or, you know, you make your own decision and path in life. And it does. It comes out in everything around you, like how you behave, how you treat others, what your jiu-jitsu growth is like, because it's a journey. This is a path that we're on. It's not just jiu-jitsu. It's a whole way of life. That's the way I see it. So, you know, I have been brought up and learned and now teach that, you know, we are all equal. We can have disagreements, but the mat teaches me that there is no inequality. You know, I regularly get pounded on by Brittany, is one of our purple belts at Yamasaki. She regularly runs me all over the mat. And, you know, so it's not whether how much you win or how big you are, how bad you are, it's your way of life. And if that comes out like that, then, you know, you should really start checking about, you know, who you are and your choices that you make in life. Like, you know, this life is so short. You and I both know we've both been at death's door. And why would you want to waste it with negativity and aggression when you can see the beauty flourish around you?
And that's my, I don't think I could have said it any better. You know, when you look at that aspect, I think it's one I'm going to look into because I'm a journalist and I have the opportunities to reach out to several people with great integrity in the artistry of jiu-jitsu, and I'm very lucky and fortunate in that aspect of knowing such, you know, successful individuals that can give me true advice. And I'd like to create a show in one of these days and have a roundtable with you, Felicia O, Professor Jenna Bishop, Gabby Romero, and others, and see where we can get the justification for this issue and the support is, because I think it needs to go away. You know, Ron, I truly appreciate you, my brother, filling in and coming in and doing what you had to do. I woke this man up out of bed, people, just so I wouldn't have dead air. I'm great at asking questions, but I suck at filling dead air. Ronald, I love you, bro. You know, you had my back. You've always had my back. And I know you always will till the day, you know, they bury us. I love you for helping me out tonight. And I truly appreciate you waking up to do the show. You know, I can't say thank you enough, man. I'm going to hand the mic to you if there's anything you'd like to say before I let you go. I love you, brother, and thank you so much for covering my behind.
John, no problem. You're family. This is what we do for each other, right? You know, we stand up and take care of each other when we can. So I really appreciate you letting me on. You know, we talked about doing some airtime to highlight what happened at the UAE JJF Grand Slam in L.A. And how we're getting ready to move on next is London, I think. And, you know, giving us a voice, that to me, like, I can be out on the mat and I can do my thing and, you know, win or lose. I can show people, but without a voice, that's what you give us. So, and anytime you need me, you know, you just call. That's what family does. So I will, I'll catch up with you a little bit later, brother. You guys, you have a good interview, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, brother. Love you, and God bless.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to go ahead and get Shannon the Cannon and Richard call. He's ready. He said he was.
Hey, Cannon BJJ.
What's up, Shannon? This is the Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire. How you doing, brother?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Man, I had to interview Shannon Rich, the man that doesn't know when to give up, the man that doesn't know when to stop fighting. You know, I'm not even going to go there because I don't even know if we can. You already know what I'm talking about. But what is it, Shannon, that truly keeps you going in the sport with the veracity that you do? You know, I could only think of one other individual that keeps going like you, and that's Tony Lopez. What is it that's in that heart of Shannon Rich that says, hey, it's not my time?
You know, Don, it's a combination of a lot of things. One, I guess the most important is it's the testing yourself. You know, I'm testing myself against the best out there. I'm testing myself against another man in a cage. I'm testing myself against another man on the mat doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's a bare-knuckle boxing, kickboxing, MMA, jiu-jitsu. It's you know, I've been training my whole life, so I like to test myself, put it out there, and a win, lose, or draw, you know, I get to find out, you know, what I did, look at the mistakes, and try to fix it. And on the other side of that is the fans, man. I have such a huge fan base. I mean, I know there's a lot of haters out there, and I believe everybody gets haters. Conor McGregor has haters. The top guys in the world have haters. I have haters, but you know what? It's the fans that keep me going. You would not believe how many fans reach out to me. They meet me at the gym. I train every day at Fitness One. What an amazing gym that is. And, you know, I get people come up to me all the time, and they just, I'm like, hey, Shannon, you know, you're an inspiration. Keep it up. Keep going. So, you know, I do it for me, but also I do it for the fans.
Yeah. You know, that makes me respect you even more because, you know, I've been interviewing for people for 15 years, and I got to say, you know, that's how it was when I started. And then, you know, I start doing these interviews and I put these guys on and they don't show up. Or when they do show up, it's this entitlement aspect. You know, and I had a talk with Stitch one day and I was like, you know, I don't know how much longer I can do this. And he said, why? I said, man, this new attitude, this new era, this entitlement of some of the fighters that feel that, you know, that you owe them, that you're doing them a favor, you know. And I said, right. And they don't realize that this is coming out of my pocket. You know, I got to work right. On sponsors to pay for the show. I got to, you know, this is time I'm taking away from shooting to interview the fighters. And it's like, at one point I wanted to walk away and Stitch said, bro, we either got to live with it or we got to move on. And I chose to live with it, but I'm glad I did because I'm starting to see a new transition. I'm starting to see a new aspect of the sport that wants real again. And then you go and have a fucking event like UFC 229. I'm just lost, man. It's like, you know, I know it's entertainment. And I know that factor exists, but what would Shannon Rich really rather have, the days of old or dealing with the drama that you do now?
You know, obviously it's a mixture of both, man. Back in the day, it was good times. It was fighting. It was a learning experience. And now it's more of a business. And, you know, you would think that in 2018 with commissions and medicals and insurance and all of that, that it would be a professional or more professional than what it has turned out to be. You know, you get all these one-hit wonder shows coming around that treat fighters like shit. And, you know, you would expect that back in the early 90s, but not in 2018.
Yeah. I know, God, I wish we could talk about the situation, but we can't. You know, you know, I'm one that loves to go against the grain. You know, I don't mind.
Well, let's bring it up, man. Look, I fought this weekend. I'm just going to break it out and let everybody know that's listening to your page. Bro, I went out and fought in Delaware. First of all, I had to go through some crazy, I mean, these were medicals that were so intense, they make getting a license in California and Las Vegas look like a trip to Disneyland. These medicals were so outrageous. Little over $2,000 to pay for these medicals. We're talking CT scan, MRI, intense physical, eye exam, ophthalmologist, a crazy blood work. I mean, blood work I've never even seen before. That being said, you know, we'd go out there, we'd fly out there, we're supposed to fight in Delaware at the Bob Carpenter's Event Center. And I got to tell you, the Bob Carpenter's Event Center was an amazing venue. Seats about 5,000 people. They had an amazing cage. Everything looked picture perfect. I had a national media company out there filming me for a documentary that's getting ready to come out. So, I mean, so far everything is just going amazing. About four fights into the fight, canceled the event. We go to the commission and we say, hey, you're supposed to have some cashier's checks for us because of the show money. Obviously, we're not going to fight, so we're not going to get our win money. But, you know, it'd be nice to get our show money. They handed us out some personal checks. My personal check was $15,000, bro, and it bounced. Are you kidding me? They bounced every check to every fighter. So, Diamond World Fights, the promoter is Gail Stallings. Man, they just bounced a bunch of checks. And come to find out, it's a classic felony to write a check over $1,500. And believe you me, my attorney's going to get on this, man, and we're going to do what we got to do to, one, try to get everybody paid. But you know as well as I do, we're probably never going to see that money, but definitely going to file charges, and maybe the law can do something about these crooks.
You know, most definitely, you know, because Brad Kohler pulled that crap on that $1 million.
Dude, I was part of that. I remember I was there. I mean, that was a sham in itself. He's promoting this event as a MMA event in Russia, and it was bullshit. It was in, I think, Minnesota. And yeah, man, and it was all bullshit. I thought I was doing a real fight. I get there and it's no, guys, this is pro wrestling. You guys are just gonna go spar. So yeah, man, that was all bullshit too. And I feel sorry for the fans that bought into his bullshit. I feel sorry for the several. I mean, dude. I've gotten so many emails and phone calls. There must have been over 100 people reached out to me and said they bought this event on pay-per-view and haven't got refunded yet. So, yeah, man, it's just a bad 2018. I can't believe this even happened. You want to hear the worst part? Thursday is weigh-ins. So all the fighters are supposed to get there Tuesday. So I get there Tuesday. I fly out from Arizona, go all the way to Philadelphia, get there on a Tuesday. Tuesday night, my opponent's supposed to show up. Wednesday morning, I get a phone call that said, hey, your opponent got into a fist fight with TSA at the airport, and he's in jail. So I'm like, well, shit, my fight's off, man. What the hell? Come to find out later, they let him out of jail the next day, so he hops on a plane, and he shows up. He's there Thursday. He goes to weigh-ins. He makes weight. I mean, it's heavyweight, so he didn't have to make weight, but he stepped on the scale. I stepped on the scale. We do the stare down. We do the whole thing. But the stress and the, God, man, just the bullshit going up to this event. And finally, we get there, then they cancel the event on everybody. One of the guys, Matt Lightning Hall, he made weight. The other guy missed weight. He was overweight. And, you know, you're not supposed to mess with the scale. Believe it or not, man, the commission moved the scale. They messed with it. The guy weighed in two more times, and finally he miraculously made weight. I've never seen that before. So this commission is the WKA, World Kickboxing Association, or something like that. Look, I'm telling you, I've never seen shenanigans like this. This was just insane, man. Sheena Star was there. She fought in Ryzen. another girl named Jackie from Manny Hernandez's camp, who fought in Invicta and Bellator. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, local guys, man. It was top fighters from all over the country that had their sweat, tears, and blood training for this event. And we get out there, and we got duped. Everybody got duped.
Well, see, and people think that you just got burnt the $15,000. They don't realize the cost of training camp, the cost of everything that goes into getting ready to prepare for a fight. So
I trained for 4 months, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
4 months for a hard training camp, getting ready for this fight. And so
that's,
if anybody's out there, man, I'm a heavyweight. I'm a small heavyweight. Anybody out there that wants to put me on a card, I will come and I will fight. So I'm looking for another fight. Do you know anybody?
Hey,
how
good do you know Dave Thomas?
What's that?
How good do you know Dave Thomas?
Ben Thomas? I know him pretty good.
No, Dave Thomas.
Oh, Dave Thomas.
The one that is doing everything with the World Bare Knuckle Fighting Federation.
Dave Feldman, you mean?
No, he's a manager that has a lot of pull. And he's Chuck Liddell's manager, and he also manages Brennan Ward. And,
no, I don't know him at all.
Okay, well, I'm going to hook you up with him, bro.
Man, reach out to somebody because I want to fight, man. I'm in shape, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah, well, because they got that event November 9th. And so let me see what
you're talking about. The one Boss Rudin is now the new president.
I believe so.
Yeah,
I know. It's
I reached out to Boss earlier today and see if he could help me out. Boss has always been a good guy.
Yeah, and then I'll hit it at the other angle, and we'll see what we both can come up with, because I believe you truly deserve it, man. And, you know, see, one thing I want people to realize about you, Shannon, is no matter what, nobody can talk shit, because you truly have done it all. I mean, you've done everything, and you show up time and time again, whether it's a win or a lesson learned. You're always game. You're there, like you said, you're there for the fans. You're there for the people.
Look, man, I've never, in 27 years, I've never ducked anybody. I've always showed up, came, made weight. Even if I got to fly across country and or overseas by myself, it doesn't matter. I'm going to show up. I've never ducked anybody. Win, lose, or draw, I'm going to be there, and I'll fight anyone, anywhere, anytime. That's just me. That's the way, that's how I was raised.
And see, what's even more tremendous to me, because I know it's from the heart, because this, people, you got to understand this business, and I'm just going to say it like it is. You know, like for people like me that are photographers that are the inner workings of the sport, in the early days you used to show up, you shoot the event, you got paid at the end of the night. And then it started, you wouldn't get paid at the end of the night. And then it plays on your heart because you love the fighters, so you still post the pictures anyway, and the promotion knows you're going to do this because they think they've outduked you. Then I started saying, well, I need half my money up front the rest of the end of the night. And then it went that way for a little bit, and then at the end of the night I wasn't getting paid anymore, to where now I won't shoot a fight unless I get paid up front.
Right.
You know, what can a fighter do to prevent what just happened and occurred to you from this promotion? Because I think it's unjust.
Honestly, I think the fighters did everything they were supposed to do. You got to remember, we were dealing with a commission. The commission flat out lied to every single fighter and said, hey, guys, we have cashier's checks for you guys. The money is here. We have the money for you. So we all thought everything was good. I mean, usually when you deal with a commission, let's say Las Vegas, California, Arizona, the commission has the checks up front. Yeah, they're not personal checks, they're cashier's checks. That's just as good as cash. As a fighter, we did everything in our power. Possibly, we had a signed contract, we turned in our medicals, we were dealing with a commission, and we got duped. I mean, that's plain and simple. We got duped.
See, that's just not right, because I know every fighter that you mentioned that got duped and or person involved, so... And that kind of plays a little bit on my heart. I'll get with you on that, on the promotion aspect, because I'm, you know me, I put Brad Kohler to rest. I put KOP in Michigan to rest with the racial issues, and
Yep.
It's one thing I do. I'm for the sport. I believe in the sport. I've lived the sport half my damn life. And if I can't give back to the sport or be afraid to go against the grain, then I'm truly not for the fighter. You know, I tell you, it pisses me off. But I'll hook you up with Dave Thomas because I think we could probably figure something out. But, you know, the cool thing about it is, Shannon, that you'll come back, you'll fight another day. And, you know, but I just wish there was some way that we could make a process where, you know, no matter what, it's a third party that handles the money or the situation. Because I deal with so many fighters that, you know, that do this aspect to people that it's out of control now, you know.
Well, you know, it was all down to this commission and this promoter. I mean, other commissions are amazing. The California Athletic Commission, the Nevada Boxing Commission, MMA Commission, Arizona Boxing Commission, MMA Commission. These guys are doing their job. They take care of the fighters. They make sure that, one, you're safe. Number two, you got your medicals. And number three, they have your money. So, I mean, it just all comes down to a crooked commission and a crooked promoter.
Well, if you're out there listening and you want Shannon McCann and Rich, and you want a tremendous guy that's going to give you the hell of a fight, any promotion, you know, Rich Cho, Ian Matthews, if you're listening, I mean, I'm sure Shannon will step back up in Bellator just for the hell of it because that's
and
where
I actually tried to reach out. I tried to reach out to TJ Thompson and Scott Coker, and I told him, look, man, I'll fly myself. And this goes out to anybody in the U.S., man. I'll fly myself out there. No corner man, I'll just show up and fight. If you can book me, you get me on a fight, the money's right, I'll come and I'll fight anybody you've got.
See, you can't beat that. I'll get with you, man. I know a few people, bro. We'll make something happen for you.
Let's do it.
You've been doing me right for a long time, and that's, you know, that's one thing. Like my first guest, you know, her phone was going through an update, so Aspen Ladd couldn't take the first call, but she's gonna come on after you. So, but I was able to make a call to a brother, and he came on like that. So that's what family's about. That's how the sport should be. You know, we need to take care of each other instead of running it the way we did. But since we're talking about commissions, you know, I want to get your thought because you have been in the sport. You're a veteran of the sport. You're an icon in the sport. You know, when Dana first came out and said that the Nevada State Commission was going to hold both Khabib and McGregor's pay, to me that statement was wrong because they both came, they did their job, and I think Khabib should be held accountable for everything after the fight, but I don't think they should have been entitled to hold his pay. Now, as a veteran of the sport, what's your thought, brother?
You know, it all stems back to the commission is there to do their job and to make sure rules are followed and laws are followed. So if there's an investigation, if there was an assault, there was, you know, some rules and infractions, then, yeah, they're going to hold your money. Did they hold his belt? That's something with the promotion is going to do. But holding his purse, now that's what commissions do. Real quick, I mean, I can give you an example. I fought a guy named Brian Ebersole out in California. Brian Ebersole did a cartwheel kick to pass my guard and ended up getting my back. He had on a huge cup, kind of like the ones that Shoney Carter would wear, those big steel cups.
Yeah.
He put it in my back. He grinded it in my spine, and I tapped before he sunk in the rear choke. The commission came unglued. They yelled at, oh, no, this is a work. This is a fixed fight. This is some bullshit. And they fined us both, and they took our purse. I had to go to court, hire an attorney, and it took almost 2 years before they released our purse. And then they finally dropped all charges and found out, you know, we were both innocent. So, yeah, man, they can be in a world of trouble if they really did hold their purse, and you just got to listen to what the commission tells you to do.
Yeah, well, my thoughts were the fight was already over. You know, and what occurred actually with Khabib was outside the cage. It wasn't in the cage, but
right.
He released a statement today saying that they can keep his pay, they could shove his belt, and if the contract
of Dana's ass. I saw that.
Yeah. You know, my thoughts were, you know, it's good to see somebody showing, you know, a little bit of balls back towards the promotion. But and also the other side of me saw it as they're hyping it up for another fight. What are your thoughts, Shannon?
Man, at this point in time, I'm not going to say anything, man. I think Conor McGregor, is he a great hype man? Absolutely. But, man, he was away from the sport for 2 years, and he went in there, and Khabib just, you know, beat his ass for four rounds. I think Conor should have took this fight a little more serious. And, you know, if they get a rematch, it's going to be one hell of a rematch because obviously people are going to pay to see it. I mean, they do sell tickets.
You know, Shannon, the reason I wanted you on the show was because, you know, we ultimately let it out. But, you know, it hurts me to see somebody like you get stiff because you are a tremendous attribute to the sport and giving back to others in life. And I don't think it's just that for that to happen to anybody. You know, so like we did say, if anybody's interested, and I will get with you later, Shannon, on a couple things. But, you know, I wanted to share who you are because there's not very many people that have lasted as long in this sport as you have. You know, you've created a legacy not just for yourself but for your family and for future generations of the sport. You know, when you look back at it now, what truly inspires Shannon Rich other than, you know, I know winning a belt, but what truly inspires you to just want to exist in this sport so long? I mean, I know I kind of asked that earlier, but...
Yeah, but, you know, I've been in this sport since its infancy, since the beginning. You know, in 1991, I had my first career fight. That was prior UFC. We were fighting in Mexico. They had the chicken fights, the dog fights, and the people were fighting. We were doing pit fights. To make a long story short, I saw the UFC won in 1993, and that was what I wanted to do, man. So what I do is I start hanging around guys that were fighting in the UFC and became friends with them. And then obviously went on to bigger and better fights, getting in sanctioned events like fighting the Super Bowl in Hawaii in the Blaisdell Arena in front of 10,000 people. Making my way, you know, I never had a manager, I always managed myself. Maybe I should have had a manager and maybe some things like this want to happen. But that being said, man, look, I got an ESPN magazine. I fought in Pride. I fought in Pancras, King of the Cage, Gladiator Challenge. You name it. I fought and fighting in Russia, China, London. Not only do I do MMA, but I also do kickboxing. I was fighting Lethway in Burma and Myanmar. You know, one of the only three Americans to ever go to Myanmar and fight Lethway. You know, bare knuckle boxing with elbows and headbutts, takedowns. And then fighting in K-1. K-1 is the Super Bowl mixed martial arts or kickboxing. Fighting in Pride, main events against Sakuraba. Man, nobody wanted to do that. And here I am, a little kid, Coolidge, Arizona, small town, three stoplights. I was small growing up. I got bullied. I got picked on. I had teachers telling me, hey, man, you're never going to amount to anything. And for sure, you're never going to be a professional athlete. Well, I proved everybody wrong, man. And here I am, age 48 years old. I'm still doing it. Still going strong. I feel like I'm better now than I was in my early 20s and 30s. So, you know, that's it. All I got
and you do. You look it too, bro. And, you know, you know, before I wrap things up here, that's what I told Chuck Liddell, you know, when, because I'm privileged in some aspects. I got to see some of his training through Facebook, through a FaceTime, and before I interviewed him. And I got to tell you, the guy looks better now than he did when he left the sport in 2010. You know, and a lot of people are wanting the legends and the aspects, older aspects of the sport that still can't compete. They're wanting them back. You know, so if you're a promoter out there listening, I think you better take notice because a lot of people want to see it, and you got fighters like Shannon Rich who are willing to show it. And I couldn't think of a better man. You know, Shannon, I appreciate you coming on the show. I know you were a little late because of training and this and that. But, man, I love having you on the show. I'd love to have you back on again in the near future. But I'll give you a call tomorrow. We'll hook up on everything, and we'll try to see what we can do for you. But I'm going to hand the mic to you. If there's any sponsors, friends, or family, or any social media sites, or just anything you want to add to the program before we let you go, brother, the floor is yours.
And, you know, I got Postar audio and sound, and I got my gym, canonbjj.net. If you want to get a hold of me, canonbjj.net. and then also I train at Fitness One in Glendale, Arizona. I'm telling you what, man, one of the best gyms around. Richard Bruce, solid guy right there. Anyway, that's all I got, man. I appreciate your time. And until I see you guys again, Shannon the Champ.
Yeah, most definitely. Thank you, brother. You have a good night, and God bless you.
You too, buddy.
That dude's so cool, man. He's been around since day one, man. You gotta love him, man. You know, I don't always look at records, I look at hearts. With that being said, we're gonna jump to Aspen Lad. Hey Aspen, this is Don McGuire with the Fighter's Voice. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, since you flaked on me in the beginning. No, I'm giving you a bad
time.
Oh, you're all good, my friend. You know, I wanted you back on the syndicated show for a simple fact that, you know, I look at the career that you've demonstrated, orchestrated, and I've been a part of this journey for a long time. But I look at the fight that you just had with Tonya Evinger, and I finally came to the assumption, the realization that I truly saw a true champion on the rise, a true warrior. You went out there, you beat a pioneer of the sport, a champion of the sport, and you did it with devastation. You know, how does it feel knowing that all this time you've put in, all the hard work that you've, you know, put blood, sweat, and tears into has finally truly paid off, and the world is really recognizing you for the talent that you do ascertain?
Honestly, it's kind of like how somebody asks, how do you feel every time you have a birthday? Like you're going to feel different or older or another year. But no, it feels the same as any other fight. It's just every single step is that you're trying to improve, right? This one I'm very happy with because I did. I showed that improvement. But it kind of feels similar to any other fight. Okay, I messed up on this. Let's improve and keep going.
Well, you sure, if you won't say it, I will, man. I saw an Aspen Lad that I've never saw before at UFC 229. I know you say it was another fight. It was another opponent. You learned from it. You move forward. Now, I look at what people are saying behind the scenes. You know, you're getting a lot of recognition. A lot of people are talking about you. You know, up to date, they did say that Tonya Evinger was one of the greatest opponents that Cyborg ever had, but yet you went out there and you demolished, you know, a good friend of mine, Tonya Evinger, in the first round. You know, people are comparing or are starting to say they would like the aspect of seeing an Aspen Lad Cyborg fight. What would your thoughts be if that came to, you know, an apparition and was offered to you, even though you're in different weight classes?
Yes, that'd be something that if it was offered, we'd have to talk about it, talk about obviously price and where, but yeah, I can see that fight. But the thing is, it doesn't really do anything for anybody in the 135 weight pound class. That's just, you're going to go out and do a lot of money kind of fight.
Yeah, I still, you know, I'm just saying what my colleagues are saying, what I think, you know, honestly, I see in you a fighter that is coming into their own. I hopefully you understand that thought. I see a fighter that's finally finding their stride, you know, getting their groove, I guess is the best way to say it. Would you say that UFC 229 was your most comfortable fight to date?
Well, absolutely. It felt like another day in the office. There was no adrenaline dump. There's no extreme nerves. I've been there so many times and done it so many times with my same team. I was ready to go. I'm very comfortable, very relaxed, warmed up for a couple minutes, went out, handled business. But everything leading up to that was just calm. Being in there, I was calm. I was able to think or perform in the way that I wanted to. And the year, darn near, it was a layoff, man. It was a long time, but it just allowed for improvement. And I've never felt as good as I did in that fight.
You know, because it's weird. You know, I sit back and I look at you know, your debut outing in Invicta. This is crazy, you know. And I look at that Aspen lad, and see, that's what's kind of weird about it for me, and a lot of people don't get to have this aspect, because not only did I interview you before I met you and for previous fights, but then I met you at your debut. I interviewed you for that. I met you then, and I shot a couple, you know, what, two or three of your fights. How many times did you fight Invicta? Twice, mm-hmm. right?
No, I think no. It was like five times. My first five pro fight.
Oh, geez. See, yeah. I'm getting old.
But there was, I think, a few times. I think one of them was in Vegas. One was in L.A. So it probably seems like it's in Kansas.
Yeah, that's what it must have been. See, but I am getting old. I'm getting old-timers. But, you know, you look at those fights from the early career, and then I watch you mm-hmm. develop. See, a lot of people don't get to do this because not only did I get to interview you, I got to shoot you fight, and I still get to interview you, but I get to watch the growth of you, and I get to see what your training, you know, trainers and coaches and managers have all done with you. And you've maintained the same rapport. A lot of people say, well, you know, she doesn't say very much in an interview, or she doesn't really do this, but that's not the type of person you are in life. I mean, you're truly a quiet, different aspect of a person. I mean, the best way to say it is, I don't think I ever got you to laugh on the show except for once, and that was way back in the day, but you've kind of changed a little bit since then. But to see where you're at now, it's tremendous. I mean, Aspen, in some way, you got to look at yourself, and you got to be able to take something away from, you know, all that's transpired. If there was one little thing that you could say transpired from all of, you know, everything happening so quickly and so, you know, so devastating, you know, what would you say you could take away from your career thus far?
It's the improvement, not just with myself, but with my entire team. It's been the same since the very first, I won't say amateur fight, but my very first pro fight. I've had the same circle, the same team, same coaches. I read an article recently about after, because I usually don't pay attention to opponents leading up to a fight. It's just not something I do. I don't want to get into my head. But about, and I'll use Tony as an example, it's just my own lines of, like, I fired a coach, that kind of thing. Like, that's just a concept that doesn't really compute with me, because I've had the same coaches, and they're basically family. And not only have I progressed and grown, but they've done it with me. So the whole concept of, like, a coach or a team as somebody you just employ for a purpose is beyond me. I really think my success has a lot to do, more than a lot. It's just a very critical part of me, and improvement is them. That is kind of the thing that's taken away from it, at least for me. I've watched these people, they've come and they go, they're switching coaches all the time. It never really seems to work out. I think just a steadiness and a loyalty. Obviously, some people don't deserve it, but when you find a team that does, you all get better together, and that's kind of my takeaway.
Yeah, and that's even the more crazy part of it, because I know all of them. I've been interviewing them along with your teammates for it's been forever. You know, it's funny because I had Liam McGeary on the other night. And he goes, Don, you've been interviewing me for almost eight years. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, you know, where, you know, because this was prior to him winning the world title. And he goes, you've been there since the beginning, mate. And then we start talking, and it's like, I've been there for that. When him winning the world title, him getting new hobbies, him transitioning to opening gyms, to now having a family. And it's like, It's crazy when you sit back and you realize I've been doing it this long. But mm-hmm. I told Jim, I'll be quite honest, this is a hard show for me. You know I'm transparent. You know that. You've known that for years. You know, it's no secret that Tanya Evinger and I are very good friends. You know, and we have been for years. I've been with Invicta for years. I've known Tanya forever. But you got to set that aside to do a radio show, and you got to set that aside to be in the business. You know, I told your manager and trainer, Jim, that I felt I had to have you on the show because what you demonstrated to the world and to the sport was that of a warrior. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted you on the show, was because to me, you truly, like I said earlier, you found who Aspen Ladd is. And I know you won't agree, because that's just who you are. You know, I know you look at it as another fight, but to me, this was the hugest moment or the hugest obstacle in your career, and you just walked through it. When you look at it that way, what are your thoughts?
Going into this fight, it wasn't one where they call you up and go, hey, you want to fight this person, or you have this many weeks. It was just, I was waiting for a fight. We saw her opponent drop out, and we called. And as soon as we saw the opponent, I knew this would be an extremely tough opponent. I mean, Tanya was the champ for a reason. She's undefeated for a long time for a reason. She's very good. And she's, when I got the fight, I was like, okay, she's very good at what I like to do. I mean, obviously we're different fighters, but she's a very grindy, gritty, dirty fighter. I was kind of excited about that, honestly. Okay, I'm going to pit myself against what's somebody who's widely known as one of the best at this and see who comes out on top. But there's never a moment in this fight, or any of them really, yes, you go through mentally, you go through what happens if this happens in all these different situations. There's never a moment you're like, okay, this is unwinnable. I'm not winning this fight. This is terrible. Oh my gosh, I'm so scared, that kind of thing. No, it's just a breakdown mentally of, okay, so what I'm going to need to do. If this happens, this is what I'm going to need to continue to do. So it's kind of a mental preparation thing, at least for me. I swear, I feel like I live the 500 times before I ever get there. So I thought about so many times what could go right, what could go wrong, every single outcome. But it always ends up with my hand raised. Period. It doesn't matter how bad it got or how hard it's going to be. I'm never worried or going in with the mindset, okay, this is unwinnable, unbeatable. It's simply, okay, I'm going to go handle it.
And that's what you've been doing. And I tell you what, it's catching a lot of the sport's attention because, you know, you've come up the old-fashioned way. I mean, you've earned it. You haven't been given a, you know, a free pass in the sport. You've truly earned each and every step of the way. And, you know, I gotta be quite honest with you. To see you go against a former world champion, a pioneer and a veteran, I said, all right, this is going to be the biggest test in Aspen's career. And you made Tanya Evinger look old. I mean, she's my friend, and she'll understand this analogy, but you made her look like a fighter that needs to rethink where she's at in the sport. And that tells me one or two things. Either it's time for Tanya to hang up her gloves, which I don't think it is, or Aspen Ladd is a whole new level of a fighter that most people haven't seen before. And I think MMA Gold has done a tremendous job. What is it about that aspect of your training that has allowed you to grow with such devastation?
They know me better than I know myself. My coaches, Jim, Mike Guy, even my manager, Dave. They know what I do and how I do it. They know every habit of mine, know everything. And I know them. The trust is complete. And then there's new people on the team, like Coach Jake Duendarl, who's I've been working with diligently for a year now, who's amazing. But it's just that trust and that we know each other so well. I think that's allowed us to really work and improve and get to this point.
You know, it's tremendous because you shocked the world, my friend. You know, how crazy was it for you to have that type of a tremendous night and then all this melee breaks out? how surreal was that for Aspen Ladd, being at an event, and then World War III breaks out?
Well, I get it. It was nuts because obviously you fight, you win, you got the world's best feeling, a massive adrenaline dump. And then after, obviously before the fight, they have both the corners separated, right? Red and blue, you don't see each other. But after you're all stuck in the same room together, same big room with food, but every single fighter, win or lose, whatever happened, you're stuck in there. And then this craziness starts happening where Khabib and Conor, people attack one another. So we weren't able to leave. They actually held us back there for, I think, like an extra half hour or something. And then there's a ton of security to escort everybody out. But it was just bizarre. And I think I would have been more paid attention or cared had I not had the world's biggest adrenaline dump and was basically falling asleep on the table. But it was a very bizarre experience. I think that's the word for it.
Yeah, it's I got to be honest. I'm at home with a broken foot, and that's part of my just – I pulled a rookie move, and I'm not going to say much more about it. But
how the heck did you manage that? Because I saw something about you posting about it earlier. It's like, how did you manage a broken foot?
Getting out of bed. That was, such a rookie move. Well, most people know I'm an amputee. I wear a prosthetic. And I had my liner next to the side of the bed. I stood up and I slid forward, and I thought I was going to be cool. I had the laptop in one hand and went to grab for the dresser, and I missed it and hit my head, and I came down on my stump. But then I flipped over, and my foot hit the wood floor, and I heard crunch. And it isn't the first time I broke it, but it's probably the most stupidest way you could probably break your foot. If anybody can do it, I did it. It was one of my most embarrassing moments.
I'm sorry that I messed on your show, but...
No, it's cool. It's cool because it's comical, you know. But, you know, Aspen, like I said, you know, you've been doing my show for years. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you where you're at now and what you've accomplished. You know, not very many fighters can say that they're two fights into the UFC, but yet ranked seventh in the world. You know, how do you maintain the calmness about you and that thorough thought into going into every fight as it's just another fight? Because, you know, I'll be honest with you, a lot of fighters in your position would be not able to handle all of the pressure that's put on you, that all, you know, the promotion, the glamour, the people wanting aspects of you now, because now you thoroughly are ranked seventh in the world. You're the seventh greatest fighter in the world in your weight class. You know, how do you deal with all the extra added on top of still continuing to train to be a fighter?
It's just part of the job. And honestly, I think it helps that I've never really been that excitable of a person. Like, I don't get anxious or worried or like, oh, my God. It's just, okay, this is the next part of the job. I have to go do this. I'm going to accomplish that, then go do what's necessary to win. So it's just very simple. And I kind of order things that way in my mind. Okay, step one, two, three, four, five. Maybe step one, get up, go for a run. Step two is handle media day. Step three is go cut weight. Step four is eat a meal. But that's how I look at it. I don't really look beyond or fret about what's coming up the next day or the next hour. It's just full focus on whatever I have to do in that moment. So it kind of helps me a little.
Now, when I kind of want to touch on that because this fight, we saw a different frame on Aspen Ladd. Lately, if you follow Aspen Ladd, you see a uniquely different frame on you. You know, your appearance is different. You know, what was it in the thoughts of your nutritionist and your trainers and that to allow you to make the transformation to where your physique is at now?
Oh, geez. Honestly, there was nothing that we did outside of the ordinary for this fight as opposed to other ones as far as getting ready cardiovascularly and all that. Believe it or not, I didn't touch a weight for a long time because I can't put on any more muscle. It's not something I try to do. It just happens. Like, the way my body looks now is not a concentrated effort from anybody. Eating properly has definitely helped. I have an amazing sponsor for that, Ultimate Fitness Food, but there's been nothing out of the ordinary. This is just how my body's choosing to be right now and how it's functioning. It's kind of hard to explain, I guess.
Yeah, you look like a beast. I'm not going to lie. When I saw you, I was like, damn. I mean, yeah, there's definitely a transition. I was like, you look like a mini version of the Incredible Hulk. I was like, you know, the biggest 135er I've ever seen. But it's true. I mean, I see the determination, and I know the team that you work with, and I know they watch everything to a T, and that's got to be a tremendous added effort, not having to worry about any of that, just showing up and fighting. You know, when you look at a lot of the fighters, it hinders their career because they don't have the team that you do. And I know what the team that you have means to you, but the proficiency that's showing time and time again, you know, how much easier is it for you going into a fight camp, know that all you got to do is listen and show up and fight?
It takes all the stress out of it. It's the same for everyday training. All I got to do is show up and listen. For a fight, all I got to do is show up and listen. It's very simple, and it takes a lot of weight off of me. I don't have to worry about, okay, I got to run around here. I got to find a guy that's good at this. I got to, I don't know, pay this dude to come over and help me, even though he doesn't know me that well. This seems like a frantic, terrible way to live. Kind of reminds me of, like, a dude or a female who's juggling, like, three or four partners, and they're trying to appease everybody and not let everybody even know about the other one. It's like, that just seems exhausting. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, well, you truly have found the right path to be on. You know, you've got tremendous training partners. You've got an impeccable staff that you work with. And, yeah, you truly – I think one of your teammates said it best. He said, that's one thing I love about the team that I'm on. He said, I don't have to worry about nothing but showing up and fighting. You know, so that has to be a tremendous load off your shoulders. You know, now that you're getting to unwind now and you're getting to kind of look back – you know, and I know you're not going to give me an answer because I know Aspen Ladd, but, you know, when you look at a couple of days out after the event, you know, in some way you got to look back and you got to be proud of the accomplishment that you just set, you know, set forth in front of the world. If there was one aspect that you can take away from that and that type of, you know, philosophy, what would it be, Aspen?
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I am proud. I'm proud of my team. I'm proud of myself, and I'm making my family proud. Like, I couldn't be happier. So there's definitely pride there, but it's not like a boastful kind. It's just like a bone deep, I worked hard for this. It's, I'm proud of myself. I'm proud of my team. I'm proud of my family, that kind of thing. The takeaway is, yes, you can always get better, but enjoy the moment, and right now I am enjoying the moment. Very curious to see what they give me next, but right now I'm just happy.
Yeah, I'm curious to see who they give you next. I mean, because let's face it, you are now ranked 7th in the world. We already know that you want that belt, you know. And but see, I know the
no,
way
I'm
you sound.
No, I'm actually not. Like, I'm not. No, see, that's the thing. Everybody hyper-focuses on a belt or a ranking or all that kind of stuff. The way I look at it is that really limits your opportunities to fight. It limits your possible opponents. I look at it as, okay, there's this whole 35 weight class, and I've only fought a couple of them. I just want to fight all of them. Let's fight as many times as possible as opposed to choose a certain rank or a certain belt or something like that. I don't want to limit myself like that. I just want to take every opportunity I can to fight, whoever it may be.
I like that attitude. You know, I really do. And, yeah, I think that's gonna go a long way because it shows you're not afraid to face anybody. I mean, you're just there because you love it. Now, hypothetically speaking, if you keep going at the rate you are right now, and this is purely hypothetical, but if you continue to go at the pace you are now, you will be in belt contention. You will get the fights. I mean, you truly went out there, and like we said earlier, you beat a pioneer. You beat a former world champion and somebody who is well-known in the sport. You know, they're going to give you somebody that is going to give you an opportunity to move forward. But I liked your answer, you know, that I'll fight anybody. But that day's going to come that you do get that opportunity. And sitting back, it's great knowing that you're just going to look at it as another fight. You know, and that's what's cool about you is it doesn't matter. Even if it was you're going to go into a world title fight. What I'm trying to say is you're going to go into a world title fight the same way you went into the title fight with Tonya Evinger. Is that a fair assumption?
Pretty much. It's no use stressing yourself out, putting an extra emphasis on a particular fight, a particular opponent, a particular date. Like, this last one is the biggest fight card maybe ever. Who knows? An amazingly talented opponent. But putting extra stress on yourself when you have to go and perform, it doesn't help you.
Yeah.
Just relax. Go do your job.
That's what the mountains are for, right?
Yes. That's what I need.
And that's where Aspen breaks away to every time. You know, Aspen, like I said, I wanted to have you on the show tonight because I wanted to tell you how proud I am of what you've accomplished in the sport. I wanted to share with, you know, my listeners and everybody that knows you and let the sport know that there truly is, you know, a gladiator in the making in you. You know, I think your team has done a tremendous job. I think the sport is going to, you know, truly take note of who you are after this last fight. I think you've got a tremendous career in front of you, and I just wanted to say I'm proud of you. You know, I've been interviewing you since I can't even remember, but to watch the growth of you and see where you're at now, it's been tremendous. You know, if there was anything that you could say to the people that have backed you since day one, Aspen, what would that statement be?
Thank you. It's just simply thank you for the belief. And besides just my coaches and my family, everybody that believes in me and helps me and has since day one, the fans have been following me since my very first Invicta fight. Or even before that, some people are like, hey, I'm watching you in Tough Enough. Good job. That kind of thing. It's like, that is amazing to me that somebody's watched that long and is still here. So it's just thank you. I'm very grateful.
You're going to be getting a whole new bunch of fans, trust me. You keep going like this, and it's crazy. I've been in the sport a long time, and you're very humble. You're very appreciative, but I got to tell you, my friend, the fans are going to be coming. You keep fighting like you are right now and keep changing the sport and taking out top names like you have. You're going to have more fans than you know what to deal with, and you know, it's a good thing. It's a good thing, Aspen. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted you on here because I wanted to share something, an achievement that I saw that it deserved to be recognized. You know, as a friend to Tonya, it's crazy because we do cross paths, you know, with a lot of fighters on my show, but at the same time, I have to remain biased. I mean, you're my friend also in life, but the thing of it is, when somebody does something that is tremendous, and you both you went out there with respect, both of you did. You guys both respected each other after the fight. You know, it's tremendous when that happens. I'd like to see a lot more of that in the sport. I wish the whole card could have went that way that night, but it didn't. But, you know, how do you feel, on this final question, how do you feel thus far with the work that you've put into the sport? What does Aspen Ladd take away with the thought of what you've accomplished thus far?
You know, it's just a healthy sense of, okay, there's a little bit of pride, but I'm getting better. We're all getting better. But as I've given the same answer 500 times before, I'm sure it's like, okay, but I messed up on this, and that, and I need to improve over here. So my takeaway is really I just need to keep getting better. You need to keep improving in certain aspects.
And you have in interviews, you know, if you're listening and you've never listened to Aspen Ladd on my show, she really is. Go back. I'll re-air one of my first episodes with her, and I was lucky to get 20 words out of her. You've come a long way. Yeah, you've come a long way, my friend. And, you know, I truly am proud of you and all of MMA Gold for what you're accomplishing. What you did at UFC 229 was impeccable. I mean, I don't think you could have fought a better fight, and I think you got a huge, huge road ahead of you, and I think you're going to handle it, you know, with the greatest of effort and ease. You truly are proving to the sport that you're a name to be recognized, and I believe that, you know. I truly do. After your last outing, I mean, I believed in you before, but I got to tell you, I really believe in you now. That last fight was tremendous. You know, Aspen, I'm honored you came on the show tonight. I'm glad we were able to get you on since your phone was updating or you just didn't want to answer the phone. I'm giving you a bad time.
I was a terrible. So I sit and wait. He's like, no, I shouldn't. Nicole. Oh, crap.
That's all right. We still got you on, but I'm going to hand the mic to you. If you have any sponsors, mm-hmm. friends or family, social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program, the floor is yours.
As far as sponsors go, and they've helped me tremendously, it's definitely Ultimate Fitness Food. I can thank my coaches again and again, but I'm going to do it again. Jim West, Right Guy, Jake Duandara, my manager, Dave Hirschbein. This is the best manager ever, and in this sport, you think sleazebag when you think manager. Great human being. And just my family for all their help all the time. My grandparents, my siblings, my parents. I have a very supportive, wonderful system, and I'm grateful.
Well, don't change a thing, my friend. Don't change a thing, because you're creating a legacy, and you're doing it with, you know, humility, integrity, and honor, and devastation. You know, now, Aspen, where can my listeners find you on social media?
Pretty strange name, so it's pretty easy. It's all at Aspen Ladd or at Aspen Ladd MMA.
I appreciate that. Aspen, I look forward to your next fight. Like I said, I wanted to have you on here because what you did was tremendous, and I wanted to tell you how proud I was of you, and that and you and your team are doing a tremendous job. Keep up the good work. Congratulations to all of you. That was a performance that I think truly propelled you in the sport that you love so much. With that being said, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll be talking for the next 5 years.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Don't make me feel older than I already am.
Well, I was just trying to figure it out. I was like, you know, I think I've been coming on your show for like 4 or 5 years now.
I know. And then Liam with the 7-8 year thing, it kind of killed me, and then made me realize I've been doing this for 15 years. So it's like, it's pretty bad when I had Chuck Liddell on, and he remembers back the olden days when I did a show with him, and I was just like, oh, God. You know, I am getting old. But, Aspen, I really am proud of you. Keep up the good work, my friend. Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Aspen Ladd. You know, it's, God, 5 years. That's crazy. You know, I'm getting old. And my shows aren't as good as they used to be, but, you know, we just try to make it as good as possible. And tonight we had some technical difficulties in the beginning, but we made it happen. And, you know, on that note, I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie, Jacob Stitcheran and Juan Ramirez with Cutman for Hire Supplies, and last but not least, Buy Me Mouthguard, and always the United Way Merced.
It's that hip-hop music. You know, that shit back in the 70s and 80s that we grew up to love. Niggas had rhymes, cold beats. We gotta bring that shit back. Anybody in my vicinity talking loud, but kids doing the dome like they were sitting in the same seat as John Kennedy. Fly. Ain't no ducking, I'm coming to your location. Clap the enemy, that's how I give them a standing ovation. End up being a poster boy on front pages. I ain't talking beer when they put the foul.